Good morning, everyone. My name is Evan Lee, and I'm very glad to present our research work called Lock-in Pop. Operating system kernels are being used all the time. Unfortunately, a lot of vulnerabilities exist in the kernels, and many more zero-day vulnerabilities are yet to be discovered. For example, in the Linux kernel, hundreds of bugs are being discovered each year, and the trend is still growing. Many people think that running a program inside a virtual machine or a container is safe. However, this is not true, as we will show that there will be chance to reach vulnerabilities in the host kernel from containers such as Docker or LXC or from library OS virtual machines. So, to build a secure virtual machine, ideally, we would like to have two things. One, a sufficient functionality so that most, if not all, applications can run. And second, to access functionality that contains no or very few zero-day security bugs. Apparently, having the virtual machine access the entire kernel is a bad idea since there are so many vulnerabilities there. So our first big question is there a metric in practice that can help us predict where those zero-day vulnerabilities are located and then further help us find areas in the kernel that can avoid most of the bugs? So we really want a metric that can be immediately measured in practice, which is predictive of zero-day bugs locations and also help us find safe areas in the kernel that contain no or very few security bugs. So we look at two existing metrics. One is code of the age. Another is whether the code is in device drivers or not. And we want to see if they work. So we apply those two metrics to the Linux kernel code and categorize the code into different areas and groups, as shown in this graph. We used a data set of 40 security bugs, which are CVEs from National Vulnerability Database, and manually identified where those bugs were located in different areas. So we were able to compute the total number of bugs as well as the bug density, meaning how many bugs per 1,000 lines in each area. For example, when we look at this diagram, there is an area of code age from 1 to 2 years that has the highest bug density at 0.2 bugs per 1,000 lines. And as you can see, this is a black block there. And in this graph, the darker color represent the high bug density, and lighter color represent lower bug density. And the best would be to have an area of white color, which means there is no bug. So from this graph, we can see that by using this existing two metrics, really there is no area that has enough low bug density. And you can see all the blocks are pretty colorful and they are far from the white color. In addition, it would be really hard to use either of these two metrics in practice to build real systems. For example, if you want to build a system, it's really hard to build only using the old code or the new code, as well as, say, only using the non-driver code to build a system. So these two metrics don't meet our need, and we want some metric that can really help us. And this is the metric we found. And it's not complicated. We call it the popular path. which refer to lines of code in the kernel source files, which are commonly executed in systems' normal workload. And our key insight is that popular paths should contain many fewer bugs. Why? The intuition behind this idea is that the lines of code that are executed most frequently are well examined, audited, and patched by security experts and developers, so that these lines of code should be the least likely to contain security bugs. And in practice, we measured our popular paths in the following experiments. First, we run top 50 most popular packages according to the Debian popularity contest. And in a separate experiment, we have two students using their Ubuntu system for their daily workload for 5 days. And we used a kernel profiling tool called GCoff to capture the kernel coverage data. Now, we can go back and see how our popular path metric works with the bug density results. So we used the same data set of 40 security bugs and applied them on our popular path. The result is shown at the bottom. And as we can see, different from the results with the previous two metrics, where really there is no area that has enough low bug density. Now, the popular path area is really low bug density. And actually, from this graph, it is the only block that has color very close to white, which means that the popular paths contain many fewer bugs. And this is exactly what we wanted. So when we take a closer look, we can see that in the popular paths, there was only one bug found. But in unpopular paths, there is significantly more bugs there. OK, so far, we have talked about the definition of our popular paths and showed how we measured it in practice. Also, through our bug density results, we showed that the popular paths metric is a good security metric. Now, the next important question is it practically useful? Can we use it to actually design and build real systems? And before talking about our design, let's first briefly review the existing designs and see why they don't work well. So traditional designs usually have a security monitor as trusted code, which is in charge of checking and blocking unsafe calls. However, and we call this approach check and pass through. However, without a good security metric, it can be really hard to come up with a set of good or even reasonable policy for the security monitors. For example, an open system call with rare flags can reach into vulnerabilities inside the kernel. But without knowing this, the security monitor could simply allow such system calls with arguments and flags that turn out to be dangerous. In addition, in this approach, most functionality will be heavily relied on the kernel, which means that many unpopular and risky kernel paths will be used, and that would allow an attacker to potentially have the chance to leverage and exploit a flaw inside the kernel. So therefore, we argue that this design is not really secure, and we need something better that can restrict the access to popular paths. So this is our design. We call it lock-in-pop. And the name lock-in-pop means that the design tries to lock applications into using only popular paths. So one key point is that we have a minimum sandbox kernel at the bottom, which interact with the kernel and only access popular paths. And there is a broader POSIX interface provided to user programs so that their requests can be met. And system functionalities will be recreated in a user space sandbox, which we call safe POSIX here. So the functionality should be recreated in safe POSIX so that the direct using of the kernel should be avoided whenever possible. For example, the file directories should be re-implemented in this safe POSIX with basic calls like open, read, write, and close to avoid using unpopular paths. And we build our implemented our prototype system Lint, which has two major components. One is Google's native client, so we used its toolchain to compile the C source files and enforce software fault isolation. And we also used RAPI sandbox to build our safe POSIX. So the key point is RAPI sandbox has a very small sandbox kernel and a small set of basic calls that interact with the kernel in a minimum way so that only a subset of popular paths will be accessed. Also, RAPI has been deployed in real-world projects like Seattle, which is a widely used cloud computing platform for doing research and education. It has more than 20,000 users worldwide. And RAPI has been under security audit for 5+ years. These facts show that RAPI is less likely to contain security bugs. And this is our Lint architecture. So user applications will be compiled with native client toolchain. The system calls will go through the NACL glibc interface and be redirected into the RAPI safe POSIX. And most system functionality will be re-implemented in our safe POSIX whenever possible. For example, we handle the concept of file directories by writing our metadata to only normal files on the file system, and the only kernel paths that are included are common system calls like open, read, write, and close with a set of highly restricted flags so that only popular paths will be used. And there are a few things that we cannot really re-implement with our safe POSIX, which include a building block calls like nmap and thread creation. So we try to limit the use of this system calls with restriction to the flags and the parameters allowed. And in our evaluation, we compared our Lint with containers, Docker, and LXC, and an open source library OS system, Graphene. We used fuzzing to obtain the kernel coverage information. So as we can see here, Lint only triggered one bug because it's only using the popular paths. And all other systems have more bugs because they accessed some of the unpopular paths. So for Docker and LXC, those containers, they access the unpopular paths because they would pass down most system calls to the kernel and rely on the kernel to perform functionality. Graphene is a really nice library OS system. So it also recreated a lot of kernel functionality in Graphene. It accessed part of the unpopular paths because it wasn't trying to avoid the unpopular paths as they didn't know this magic. And we can also see that the RAPI also only used popular paths, which is really good for us because that means if there were bugs in our safe POSIX implementation, then those bugs were not able to reach unpopular paths. So in our security evaluation, we have an initial data set of 69 bugs by consulting the National Vulnerability Database. And we were able to trigger 35 of them in native Linux. So we used those bugs in our experiments and tried to trigger them inside each system. And Lind only triggered one bug because it's only using the popular path, while other systems triggered more bugs as they access some of the unpopular paths. And as an example, one bug was triggered everywhere except Lind. It was caused by using a rare flag OTEM file that reached unpopular lines of code inside file systems name_i.c. Lind is not affected because it is avoiding unpopular paths by restricting flags. And we can see Lind also has one bug there, and it was also triggered everywhere else. That bug was caused by an nmap call on the virtual memory file system files. As we have said, in Lind, we cannot really safely re-implement the nmap call, so Lind didn't avoid this bug. And we also did performance evaluation to see the overhead. And here in the green application is a prime number calculator, which represents CPU-bound applications, which has really small overhead. The overhead was due to native clients' instruction alignment at build time. And we also have IO-bound applications, including Apache and Tor, and those as blue applications here. And those applications need to call into our SafePosix repeatedly. So the main overhead happens inside the SafePosix. And I should also mention that much of our slowdown is from SafePosix, which is currently written in Python, which is slow. So we could get performance gains by rewriting our SafePosix in a faster language without compromising our security guarantees. But in our prototype implementation, we focused on security and didn't do performance optimization. So it could be improved. There could be chances for performance improvement. And we have current limitations. Some bugs are difficult to evaluate using our metric, like some race condition bugs. And also reaching lines of code may not be sufficient to trigger or exploit a bug. Also, the performance could be improved. And for future work, we are trying to see if we can remove risky lines of code from the unpopular paths in the kernel and still support systems and applications. For example, we are trying to build a minimum OS kernel by removing the unpopular paths and support things like Docker's Linux kit. To conclude, we propose our popular path metric, which is efficient in locating areas of code in the kernel that contain many fewer bugs. And in practice, we use our popular path metric to develop a lock-in pop design for building secure virtual machines. We build and test our prototype system Lind and show that Lind exposes about an order of magnitude fewer zero-day security bugs than three other virtualization systems that we tested. And that's all for my talk. Thank you very much, and I will be happy to answer questions. Thank you. Yes, please.
So it seems that kind of the big result here is that, you know, Linux is considered harmful, or maybe monolithic kernels aren't such a great idea after all, and kind of reinvented microkernels, and you're not really even using Linux anymore. So I guess my question is, you know, do you need Linux here? Does it, and, you know, are you advocating a redesign of Linux based on popular paths? And of course, you know, monolithic kernels exist for kind of performance and historical reasons, and Is that a problem that you can solve? And also, I guess the reason we have Linux and it's so great is drivers, and that's drivers are the biggest cause of VMM exploits, and so does your approach address those exploits as well?
Okay, so your first question is that comparing to
Do we need Linux at all? And second, what about drivers?
Okay, so I think you asked comparing to some other approaches like mini kernels, why we use this. I guess you are right. There are like different approaches, but I think there are some fundamental differences with those approaches in that it's really hard to come up with a general solution, for example, that say, hey, I can have the best of the mini kernels and existing kernels and still guarantee security. So I guess practically we just set out to try to improve in one area. And you are right, it's kind of hard, we believe, to directly compare with other approaches like mini kernels. And we are not saying those approaches are not useful. We actually hope that in the future, there are ways that we can compare with them. Does that answer your question?
I guess so. And also, actually, somebody else can ask a question, but I asked about, does it help with common VMM exploits, which are driver issues? Bugs in drivers.
Excuse me?
Well, driver bugs are often usually VMMs don't have that many security bugs in themselves, but the driver subsystems are a huge source of security bugs.
Right. So for drivers, I think there are limited things we can do, right? Because first of all, I think we need to define the workload and the use cases, because not many of the, for example, popular applications we use will access all of the drivers. So even if there are bugs, it's okay in some cases. Thank you.
Daniel Fryer, University of Toronto. I'm just curious, does the narrowing down to this restricted subset of system calls depend on the safety of the safe POSIX implementation? In particular, if you were to rewrite that in C, would bugs in your C code then leave you open to sort of calling a bad system call?
That's a really good question. So I think in our design, the safe POSIX implementation doesn't rely on any specific technique or programming language like we use Python here. Mm-hmm. It's entirely possible to use something like C, and the security guarantees won't be compromised. But the key is that at the bottom, you need to have really good restriction on the kernels that are able to interact with the kernel.
Okay, so you can just do that on the kernel side and make sure that you're never calling a system call with some interesting flag.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's certainly practically possible for a language like C.
Okay, thanks.
Dan Williams, IBM Research. I thought this was really interesting. I wanted to ask a question about granularity. So in some sense, what you're doing is you're figuring out stuff that's in the kernel that you want to pull up into the library OS based on this metric that you gave us, right?
Sure.
And what I was wondering was, did you get any insight into, so certain functions, when you wanted to pull them up, would probably bring a lot of stuff with them for their implementation,
exactly,
right? And does that limit the, it seems like that's kind of a constraint in how you can fit it to whatever lines of code you have deemed as the
right
good ones.
Yeah.
So could you talk a little bit to that?
Yeah, I think I got this, and it's a really good question. So I think you are saying if we have a good way to mapping the underlying code to like higher level API, like functions and parameters that would be allowed to see if there is a mapping in between.
I guess I'm more specifically asking about if you have something that you want to put in the library OS and it ends up pulling a lot of stuff with it, it's really hard to put into the safe POSIX re-implementation or the library OS parts.
Oh, you mean...
Did you encounter that at all in your implementation?
Right, I think that's right. But I think that happens with more complex functionality and usages. That's absolutely right, that can happen. But for us, we start with more simple and basic functions that don't have this problem yet. I mean, as we develop and have more added more functions, I assume we need to be more careful about how to deal with this.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Jingli from Microsoft Research. So popularity can be defined by either static analysis or dynamic analysis. Static analysis means you don't run applications, you just see the source code. If a function is called by many other functions, then the function is popular, right? And dynamic analysis is maybe what you do. So did you test static analysis? To me, both should make
sense.
Yeah,
that's a really good question and a really nice suggestion. So in our research, we didn't use a static analysis. We only use a dynamic way to get the popular pass information.
Okay, maybe it was a try. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a nice suggestion. Thank you very much.